From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. The furor over President Trump's map of Hurricane Dorian has made lots of people question the administration's commitment to science. In case you missed it, while Dorian was pummeling the Bahamas, President Trump tweeted that Alabama would most likely be hit too. The National Weather Service in Birmingham quickly sent out a tweet saying the state would feel no impact. But for days, the president kept insisting that he'd been right.
We had many lines going directly, many models, each line being a model, and they were going directly through. And in all cases, Alabama was hit, if not lightly, in some cases pretty hard.
He even held up maps that looked like they'd been altered with a Sharpie to show Alabama in the storm's path. Things escalated when NOAA, the agency that oversees the Weather Service, released a statement that sided with the president and criticized its own experts. This sparked an uproar among scientists. And now there's an investigation into whether NOAA violated its own ethics in how it handled the controversy. For late night talk shows, the story has played out like a comedy.
Mr. President, you're going to weather jail.
But for people who watch the Trump administration closely, it's a part of a disturbing pattern where scientists feel under attack.
Okay. This hearing will come to order.
In July, Democrats on Capitol Hill called a hearing of the House Science Committee.
Good afternoon, and welcome to today's joint hearing of the Investigations and Oversight and Environment Subcommittees.
It's in one of those dark paneled rooms like what you see on TV sometimes. Lawmakers are worried that President Trump is taking the science out of federal advisory committees. Those groups are supposed to provide guidance on policy decisions. Here's Democrat Mikey Sherrill from New Jersey.
It's essential that these committees aid the EPA in fulfilling its mandate to protect human health and the environment. Unfortunately, over the course of the last 2.5 years, we've seen a multi-pronged attack on these committees.
Three top scientists sit at a long table across from her.
My name is Deborah Swackhammer, and I'm a professor emerita from the University of Minnesota.
She's a leading environmental scientist. Her research showed how toxic chemicals like PCBs contaminate the Great Lakes. For decades, under both Republican and Democratic presidents, Deborah served on important advisory committees for the Environmental Protection Agency. But when President Trump came into office, things changed.
Interference with science advisory boards at EPA is consistent with a broader pattern of science misuse by the agency. The EPA administration has demonstrated a pattern of cherry-picking scientific evidence, of ignoring rigorous scientific consensus.
Reveal Science reporter Elizabeth Shogren has been tracking how the Trump administration has been sidelining science and weakening environmental protections to favor industry. She was at this hearing, too. And Elizabeth, why does it matter what happens to committees like the one Deborah Swackhammer was on? I got to say, it sounds pretty obscure.
You're right. A lot of these committees are completely out of the limelight, but they can play a really important role in government. They help agencies make decisions that are informed by science. There are about 1,000 of these committees across the government, and they can influence decisions that are really important to our lives, like how much pollution there is in the air. And is it safe for us to breathe?
So what's been going on under the Trump administration?
There have been lots of examples of Trump administration officials sidelining or ignoring science in order to help industry. We've covered some of this on our show, like the example of an effort to censor science at the National Park Service. This was important research being done to see how much more flooding there will be at national parks because of sea level rise and storm surge connected to climate change. President Trump is really disrupting the role that science usually plays in government. The shakeup at federal advisory committees is another example of this. And that's why I wanted to meet Deborah Swackhammer.
The witnesses are excused and the hearing is now adjourned.
Excuse me. Pardon me. Hi, I'm Elizabeth Shogren.
Oh.
So nice
Sorry,
to meet you.
Yeah,
that's okay. You can recognize me with my big mic. Anyway, so nice to meet you in person.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
She's rushing for a plane, so I grab some time with her right in the hearing room. Her committee, the Board of Scientific Counselors, helps EPA scientists decide where they should focus their research. She was chairing it when President Trump took office. A few months into his presidency, EPA officials told her colleagues they'd get second terms. But then dozens of scientists were dismissed.
All of a sudden, all these people were not on these committees.
And what was your reaction to that?
I was horrified.
And what happened to you at that point?
I still had a year left on my appointment, so I was not let go, but I was removed as chair.
Meanwhile, the committee was basically defunct. Then
I applied to do a second term, but I was not chosen.
Deborah says in her committee and others, independent scientists were driven out and in many cases replaced with industry people from companies like ExxonMobil and Dow Chemical that have a financial stake in weakening regulations. The EPA also made it harder for working scientists to join these boards.
They've taken the science out of science advice and they've made them very political.
She brings up the example of EPA's Clean Air Science Advisory Committee. It now has only one academic scientist on it.
How do you have seven people provide advice to the administrator on air pollution standards when only one of them is a scientist? I mean, that's just crazy.
What is your sense in general of how the Trump administration's approach to science and policymaking has changed the way the Environmental Protection Agency can or cannot do its job?
Oh, I really see this as a strategy. They're actually being very smart. They're not abolishing the science advisory committees. They're using them by populating them with vested, biased interest to basically rubber stamp this political agenda.
Just to be clear, other administrations have made changes to these advisory boards. And Deborah says she's seen past EPA leaders ignore their advice.
But they never told us what to say. They never messed with our composition.
No one from the Trump administration would talk with us. Officials have justified the shakeup as a way of reducing redundancies and adding other points of view. The president's allies say many of these committees get in the way of Trump's pro-business agenda. Deborah sees Trump's handling of federal advisory committees as part of a broader effort to suppress science. The Trump administration is rolling back more than 80 rules and regulations at the EPA and other agencies that were designed to protect people and nature.
You know, people say, oh, you must be so upset about EPA rolling back all these rules. I say, you know, I am, but it can be reversed. It can be changed. You know, common sense people can make a difference in the future. But I worry about science itself, because the whole point of science was to find truth, and it wasn't to be political, and it wasn't to be believed or not. You know, my least favorite phrase in the world is, do you believe in climate change? My answer is, it's not a religion. You don't believe or not believe. The evidence says, yes, it is. It's not a belief.
So from your perspective, this is very serious.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. If people lose the trust in science, I think so much of our society is built on strong science. And so if they lose that, I think we're just on shaky ground. We've lost our kind of our backbone, you know? And I don't know how to get that back.
In June, President Trump launched a sweeping overhaul of federal advisory committees. He signed a new executive order requiring agencies across the government to get rid of hundreds of them. The White House, in a statement to Reveal, said a lot of these committees are no longer necessary and they waste money. The total number is supposed to drop from about 1,000 to 350. The deadline is the end of the month.
Thanks to Reveal's Elizabeth Shogren for that story. As Elizabeth said, the government is planning to slash the number of federal advisory committees by 65%. We wanted to know how that could affect places that most decision makers in Washington never see up close. We're talking about low-income communities that agencies like the EPA are supposed to protect. So we got in touch with Dr. Shacoby Wilson.
I'm an associate professor with the School of Public Health, University of Maryland College of Park.
Dr. Wilson works with communities of color across the country, helping them gather scientific data about the risks they face from pollution in their air, water, and land. As a kid, he saw firsthand what it means to live in a town that has more than its fair share of pollution.
My father was a pipe fitter, so my dad worked at nuclear power plants. He worked at, you know, coal-fired power plants. He worked at a lot of these pollution-intensive facilities that I fight against now as an adult, you know, as a scholar, as an advocate. Also, where I grew up in Vicksburg, Mississippi, we live near a highway. We also live near a little small concrete facility, rock facility. We live near the sewage treatment plant. We also live near a landfill. So I came from a community where there were environmental hazards near us. And my father, due to his occupation, was exposed to environmental hazards, you know, and he has asbestosis. And so that's what really got me engaged in this work to really understand how the environment impacts human health. And that's when I knew that I wanted to do environmental justice in my career.
Dr. Wilson eventually was asked to serve on a committee at the EPA most people call NEJAC. That stands for the National Environmental Justice Advisory Council.
So our job is to convene as a group to provide feedback to the EPA on what it should be doing to address environmental justice issues and making sure that the EPA is integrating environmental justice throughout its programs, divisions, and initiatives.
So when you joined this committee, Obama was still in office, correct?
That's correct.
What was the difference between what you saw in the Obama administration and what you see now in the Trump administration?
So the culture in the Obama administration was different. The atmosphere, it was an atmosphere of collaboration. You had robust initiatives to address environmental justice. You had more effort. You just had a different type of energy. And also one of the biggest sort of achievements on the Obama administration that was really going to be beneficial to communities of color impacted by environmental injustice was the Clean Power Plan.
That was Obama's plan to slash greenhouse gas emissions from power plants.
That initiative was a huge, you know, sort of win on the Obama administration. And then when you fast forward to the Trump administration, oh, the Clean Power Plan, we're not doing that. Environmental justice, it's not really important to us. Scott Pruitt at the time, he never showed up to our NEJAC meetings. It just became clear that environmental justice wasn't really a priority of the administration, and particularly it wasn't an important part of the agenda of Scott Pruitt, the previous EPA administrator.
And so now the Trump administration is saying that they're going to end a lot of these specialized committees. What does that mean?
I think it's highly problematic. I mean, what we're doing now, we're going backwards. If you get rid of NEJAC, you will not have that voice of the community telling the EPA these issues are important. Some of our most vulnerable people in the country. We got immigrants. We are poor folks. We have indigenous peoples. We have folks who are burdened by all types of hazards, from incinerators to the chemical plants to landfills to concrete plants to refineries to power plants. Those folks are overburdened. Those folks are vulnerable. And with this administration, what they're doing right now, if they get rid of NEJAC, those issues will not be brought to the EPA's table. There will not be a voice to really fight for the people.
So recently you were in Alabama working on environmental justice issues there. What exactly were you doing and what was the connection with the community?
I was invited to come in as an academic expert to work with a community in Uniontown, Alabama. Uniontown's community has about 2,000 residents. Their annual household income is less than $12,000. I'm going to say it again. Their annual household income is less than $12,000. They have a landfill that takes in trash from 33 states. They also have taken in 4 million tons of coal ash. Several years ago, there was a spill in Kingston, Tennessee, and they took all that coal ash for this primarily white community, and they dumped it in the black community in Uniontown. And so this landfill was built on top of an old cemetery, black cemetery. And one of the most egregious issues in the community, most of the time when you flush your toilet, your wastewater goes to a sewage treatment plant that gets treated before it's discharged. When they flush their toilet, the wastewater goes to a containment pond, a lagoon, and then they spray the liquid waste on the ground. Yes, they're spraying human waste on the ground in Uniontown. So what we've been doing is trying to bring science to the people and help them collect their own data so they can fight against those pollution emissions. You know, just training folks on how to use science for action.
I'm still just speechless about the description that you just laid out about what's happening in Alabama. And I think that that is part of the issue when it comes to environmental justice, is that most people across the country have no idea that these type of things are going on in communities of color.
No, I agree. It's happening everywhere. They're overburdened by hazards. They don't have good access to infrastructure like parks, green space, and food. And that's why what's happening with the EPA, that's why what's happening under this administration is egregious and it's problematic. And we need to do more to stop the executive rollbacks. And we need to do more to make sure this administration knows that science is not just important in general. Science is important for these communities that we are leaving behind.
When Trump issued the executive order aimed at these advisory committees, he wasn't just pointing at yours. There's a lot of them, right?
Yes, that's correct. There's a number of advisory committees that are on the chopping block. So I think in general, this executive order is just an attack on science and the importance of science in public debate and the importance of science in policymaking. Without science, we wouldn't have the Clean Air Act. Without the science, we didn't have the Clean Water Act. Think about where we would be at if we didn't have a Clean Water Act and a Clean Air Act. Think about where we'd be at if we have a Superfund law. That science has been very important in advancing public health and advancing protection of the environment. So this anti-science climate is not just problematic for Americans in general, it's very problematic for those who are most vulnerable.
You represent all of these vulnerable communities as a scientist. What do you think the most pressing environmental danger is for those communities right now?
I think for most of these communities, it's the same issue that's most pressing for all Americans and citizens of this earth, climate change. And what I mean by that is climate change is going to impact us all. But what climate change does, it reveals environmental injustice, right? If you're living in North Carolina, where there's a lot of industrial hog farms, not only are you already impacted by the odors from all those farms, ammonia, hydrogen sulfide, and vaulted gun compounds, things that can burn your eyes and throat. You have runoff already that can get into your water supply. So remember, most people in rural areas, they're on well water. But then you bring a hurricane through, people have to escape through a toxic soup of animal waste and human waste and don't have access to water. Look at what happened with Hurricane Maria, right? That's an environmental justice catastrophe. You know, look at over 3,000 people died because of that hurricane. You had people who were trying to drink water from wells from Superfund sites. That is a major crisis. Climate change is the biggest threat to human health. Climate change is the biggest threat to folks who are already disproportionately burdened by hazards. So if we address climate change and focus on climate change through a lens of equity and social justice, we would not only protect the most vulnerable, but we also would help out other folks who are not vulnerable.
Here's a question that we struggle with in the news business. How do we make people care? Because everything that you just said, I know to be true. I know that climate change is the number one thing environmentally that we should be worried about and that we should be taking action now. I know that time is limited in how we can make change. I know that the only way we do it is if we figure out a way to make everyday people care about it. Mm-hmm. And yet still, we tell story after story after story, and we do our best to get that word out. And yet there is no change within the nation. There's no visible change, at least, within everyday people's lives.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. For me, you have to talk about issues that matter to folks. You know, when we talk about climate change and climate science a lot, we talk about the big S, right? The predictions, you know, the temperature trends over time. That's talking more about the little S in that science. That's linked to food, faith, family, health, and jobs. Make it more local. Make it more where you live, where you work, where you play, where you learn, where you pray. And that's how you talk about climate. How is climate change going to impact food? How is climate change going to impact my health? How is climate change going to impact my job opportunities in my pocketbook? How is climate change going to impact the health of my family, my elderly mother who's shut in, who doesn't have air conditioning? So remember, heat waves are hell for the poor and the elderly. Talk about those issues when it comes to health. The fact that many people of color, low-income people of color, spend so much money of their monthly income on their energy bill. Why is that a climate change issue? Well, if you have more heat issues, right, what means that you have to use your air conditioning more and more, and your energy bills are going to go up. Make it more local. Make it more checkbook.
Being that we are living in these days where there's a war against science, right when we probably need it the most, with climate change really kicking in, I'm just curious if you have any hope.
Well, you know, not to be crass about it, you know, being a black man dealing with racism, I gotta stay hopeful, you know. As a scholar and an advocate and an activist in the environmental justice movement, we're all about hope. We're fighting for social justice, right? We're fighting for health justice. We're fighting for economic justice. We're fighting for the next generation. How can you put America first if you don't put your kids first? We're fighting for our children. So you have to be hopeful in this movement if you want to make sure the next generation is not living the same levels of pollution that we're living with.
Dr. Sekobe Wilson, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Like Dr. Wilson, Jeff Olson has spent his career trying to reduce emissions from cars. But after decades of progress at the EPA, he saw the Trump administration put everything into reverse.
I've called it the most spectacular regulatory flip-flop in history. I've never seen anything like it.
That's next on Reveal.